You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Myself, I wasn't going to start yet another podcast with how bad I feel, because I'm getting tired of it. I'm getting tired of feeling bad, but I figured I'd be tired of talking about it as well. You be quiet. And then today happened. I just stuff and I had insomnia last night. No migraines, that's good. So, you know, trying to grasp silver lining of any cloud. But it in another silver lining, it gave me something to talk about today. I've got a lot of things to talk about. But the first thing I'm going to talk about is backups. And I hope you just felt a chill go down your spine. Because you should. It is my strong belief. In fact, I should say it more often. That you need backups. You need a backup for your backup. Right now, there's absolutely zero reason for you not to have a backup. I have three backups. I have an external hard drive that uses Time Machine on my Mac. I have Backblaze, which is a service I pay for that saves my computer on the cloud. And I use Google for the same thing. So most of my computer is on Google Drive right now. Scrivener, the software that I use to write, usually, has backups automatically to Dropbox. It backups automatically to Dropbox every few seconds. So, why am I talking about backups today? Clearly, I have everything under control. Yesterday, I had to take my Mac in for diagnostics. By the way, my battery is failing, but it's not bad enough for AppleCare to take care of it. So essentially, the guy's like, yeah, wait till it gets a little bit worse, and then we'll take care of it. And I know it wasn't his fault. He's got to go by the corporate rules. And I remember my husband texting me saying, well, we have your old computer here. You could use that. Do you have a backup of your computer? And I was a little, you know, surprised. He knows that I have frequent backups. And I was so confident in saying how well I was backed up. And then today, when I was doing another thing I'm going to talk about today, which was co-writing with some friends, I pulled up my book that needs edits. And it wasn't there. All the copies I have were of the old book. None of the edits I made last week are anywhere. And I went to Backblaze, and I downloaded everything, every version of my book that I have. And it's not there. It didn't save because Microsoft Word does not save automatically all the time. And if it didn't save, then there's no backup because I didn't tell it to do anything. And this happened right before my stream. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm streaming about children do not make the same mistakes I do. Even when you think you have something under your control, it's good to check things. There are worse things to have happened. I didn't lose the book. The edits I made, I'm more irritated by the fact that I have to start hunting through the manuscript again to change little things. Yeah, it wasn't like big, big swaths of text that I changed so far. Well, there was one chapter, but mostly it was like hunting and pecking for little bitty things, color changes, etc. And location changes. And I have to start all over. Quantinot Noir, I think OpenOffice's variants both work with Word and can automatically save. You know, it might save, but I have to turn it on somewhere, and I haven't done that. So, again, it worse things could have happened. You know, I could have no backups, or I could have a hard drive failure, or somehow only had one copy of my book, which sounds... it's technically impossible because it's saved as a file in Gmail. But I don't have the most recent, and so I have to start over. All the work I did last week is gone. So that's fun. Please, please, please back up your stuff. I have a friend who I thought was aware of the importance of backups. He's a very logical-minded person. And then he texted me in a panic one day that his hard drive had failed and he lost everything. And I'm like, well, you've got your backups, right? No, he didn't. It's unbelievable. It's just, it's easy. And in the case of Google, it's free. Once you upload enough, they'll start charging you. I think I pay $3 a month. Still, that's not a lot. So, that's my first, children, please learn from my mistakes. I just got sloppy because I'm so used to Scrivener. Scrivener saves automatically all the time, and if all three of my backups failed, I still have Dropbox. So yeah, I'm going to be going into Word and seeing what options I have to autosave. And if not, I don't know, I'll set a timer or something. I'll do Pomodoros, and whenever the tomato's done, I'll just save. So while I was thinking of this is a mistake I made that I don't want you to make, I thought, well, let's think about the other things in my career that I've done that I would like to caution you against. And, of course, the subject of agents came up. I never know how much of the story to tell because I never know how many new listeners or watchers there are. I don't know how often I should say this because it's a long story and many of you have heard it. I'll sum up. I'm on my 6th agent right now. That's more agents than books I have out on the shelf, or maybe equal. Anyway, it's a lot of agents for where I am in my career. And it's because I was doing a lot. I podcasted a lot of my fiction to start out with, just free podcasts. And then I did a Kickstarter back in the early days, 10 years ago, actually. I did a Kickstarter for some to my other fiction, and that got an agent's attention. But I signed with people because they were interested in me, and every writer wants an agent, right? I know there are some who don't, but I'm talking about, you know, if you do, that's a lot of us, and you think, wow, I don't have to do the agent hunt. Someone just arrived. And it's, that's not how you choose an agent. And it's so hard because it's such a weird relationship. Because you, technically, are the boss. But they're the experts. And, you know, they're who you turn to when you don't know what else to do or what's going on. And you need to have a similar view of where your career is going. So it's really hard to turn it down, but if you have a bad gut feeling about if an agent shows interest in you, follow that feeling. Because as slow as you think your career is now, it will go slower if you have an agent you can't communicate with or want you to write something that you don't want to write. Another little detail that I only learned this last November. If your agent quits being an agent, this has happened to me twice. If your agent quits the business altogether, they may or may not tell you you can get another agent within this agency or you can find somebody else. The first time it happened, they didn't tell me that. And I was passive and allowed it to happen. And my agent passed me to a woman who was very, very good at her job in selling chick lit. I love chick lit. Don't get me wrong. I got nothing bad to say about it at all. But it's not what I write. And she didn't really like what I wrote and kept trying to get me to write other things. So that was more of my time wasted working with an agent who frankly didn't like my stuff. And finally, one day, after a couple of months, I'm like, okay, tell me, are you interested in anything I'm working on right now? And she said no. So recently, when my agent quit, she said, we're going to see if we can find a fit for you within the agency, or you can leave the agency and strike out on your own in finding somebody new. You know, she gave me these options, which the first agency didn't do. I just went along with it because it's like, oh, well, here's your new agent. She represents a whole bunch of stuff that you don't write. So, I think in this case, your friends who are authors, and if you don't have any friends who are authors, count me as one and email me, mightymer@gmail.com. Contact me and I will tell you if you're feeling squirrely about something that's going on with your agent, I will help you out or get you to somebody who will help you. But don't just passively go along. It's hard because you literally hired them to do that work for you. But when that work is actually dealt with for the agent itself, then you need someone else to guide you if you don't know where to go. So don't hesitate to ask your friends. Go to Absolute Right, which is an excellent service for people asking about different situations in publishing. But don't just passively go along. I remember being angry with old me when I realized how many options I had this time around. Granted, my career's in a better place than it was the first time an agent quit on me, but it would have been nice to know. Dusty says, I literally have no idea where to even look for agents. I never know where to find this info. There are lots of places. You can check my old episodes in the past. There are many websites that help you. If you read a book that of your favorite author or someone who writes like you write, their agent should be mentioned in the acknowledgments. You know, if they're decent people. And then you can hunt them down that way. But you can just start out with a search for agent representing and then the genre you write. And the more specific, the better. Epic fantasy is better than fantasy. Space opera is better than sci-fi, etc. The Kids Are Asleep is mentioning places to find agent, query tracker, and manuscript wish list. What happens if you leave your agent and just can't get a new one? Just keep writing and trying? Yeah. I guess that would be it. Hopefully you've managed whatever made that agent choose you in the first place should make you attractive to other agents. You know, none of the agents at my old agency wanted to represent me, and so I had to go out and hunt myself. But yeah, remember what made you, whatever you did to get the first agent, and try to replicate that. If it's, you know, if you have a book out, that's even better. If you have any more specific questions, Valerie, you're happy to talk. Same, I use Scrivener for drafting, but use Word for revision and formatting. Yeah, I did the revision thing too. Yeah. Meerkat has started scouring the Locus sold book sections for agents and editors versus genre. That's a really good idea. Yes, let's get some congrats and yays for The Kids Are Asleep. Turned in her book yesterday. Well done. That's a yay button indeed. And, We have gone from my idiocy to the yay part, the good news part of the podcast. So if you have any good news, please tell me now or email me later, and I'll mention it on the next show. But the Ink Den has finally started showing work to people and getting feedback. I don't know if that's worth celebrating, but personal yay for me. Yes, it's worth celebrating because that's scary as hell. It really is. There are so many fears involved with showing your work to other people. They go beyond, is this good or bad? There's, will they judge me for that gory scene I wrote? Will they see that sex scene and think I have the exact same kinks? There's a lot of fretting. And so the fact that you're able to do that is excellent. And I'm not saying that will happen. I'm saying that's just, you know, it's hard to make that first step of getting somebody else's opinion. Also, they may not give you the opinion you're looking for. I remember I was very proud of an opening to a story and I sent it to a friend and I just thought, hey, I wrote this cool thing. Check it out. And she's like, you started out with passive voice. You shouldn't have done that. And I'm like, well, that was my fault. Should have asked her what I wanted. And she was right. I did use passive voice. Another rejection came in. Everybody cheer for Cheryl. That's awesome because you are doing the job of a working writer. And I was telling friends about it today. I said it's like if you own a bar and you've always dreamed of having your own restaurant or bar. And you own the bar and it's your name on it. And it makes money, and it's the best thing ever. People are still going to throw up in there. And you got to take the fact that you own a bar means you're going to be dealing with vomit at some point. And granted, the metaphor falls apart when you usually hire someone to take care of the vomit, but the job is working somewhere fun, but it has downsides. So when you get a rejection, you are doing your job, probably your dream job, but you're encountering the vomit. So that's why we have the yay button, because I want people to know that despite the very annoying feeling you're feeling right now, if you get rejected, it's still worth celebrating because you're doing your job. And this is the job we've all wanted to do. So, any more good news, let me know. So, the positive thing I want to talk about today is accountability buddies. I have finally started working on Zoom on a regular basis now with two groups, and it's doing wonders for my output. Granted, at times I do get on the call and then still screw around online, do the procrastination thing, but I still get more work done than not. And there's something about it's not that quite same feeling of, going to a coffee shop with a friend, especially since you have to make the coffee, but you do have that let's get together and work on this thing and I'll be your accountability buddy. For the first time in my life, I started writing first thing in the morning, like I've always wanted to do this year. And it's because of some friends I made in an online class I took. So we all show up at this. These people show up at 8, sometimes a lot of them, sometimes only one. Sometimes I'm the only one there. But it's still a, I'm gonna show up and I hope that they're gonna show up too. But if they don't show up, I'm still there and trying to see that call as a physical space where that I go to write. So I am suggesting that you find an accountability buddy. You don't have to workshop. You don't have to show each other your work. I don't. Neither of the groups that I'm writing with show their work. One of them, because it's not a writer's group. It's a group of creatives who are all focused on their own thing. There's one other writer. There's a lot of actors and dancers and stuff, but we all get together to work and focus, and it really helps. So I recommend trying to find somebody. You don't need to show them anything. You don't even need to have your camera on. You could just have the black square with your name in it, or if you know Zoom better than I do, you've got your icon face. But try to find somebody. It might work. It might help you. So I don't know if there's a word for this. I think there is, but I don't know what it is. I'm calling it self-help creep. Because the class I mentioned was a coaching class for creatives. I'd had a friend take it and he recommended it, and I thought, am I going to get anything out of this or is it just going to be a waste of money? But I trusted my friend and I did get a lot out of it. And in the class, made some friends, and they're now my accountability buddies. So I'm not in the class anymore, but I'm still meeting up with these people who are, working on their acting career or their script writing career or whatever. And it's a really good network. So not only did I learn what the teacher had to say about, creative goal setting, I also, made a friend group. So now I'm still reading various self-help books. Like the one thing. Reading the one thing, and the one thing is interesting. It's like try to find the one thing that will help you make everything else easier. And granted, after I thought for a long time, my one thing is doing the dishes at night. Because it has nothing to do with my work, but if I do the dishes at night, then I don't get distracted by dirty dishes in the morning, which means I can just make my coffee and go upstairs instead of having that either starting on the dishes and then getting distracted, or having that thought in the back of my head that the downstairs is a pit and I need to do something about it. One thing that book's creator does is like a 66-day challenge to set up new habits, and it's I liked the guy's book, and the price is okay, and it gives you a community to talk about your habits and your stuff. And I'm like, I've got every email, every marketing email they've sent me. I haven't archived or deleted it yet. And I'm sitting there thinking, and today's the last day to decide. And I realize that everything they're offering me, I already have. But because I'm getting tired of doing the work, I think there must be some other magic bullet out there. When I've already got like a system of goal setting. I've got an accountability buddy group. Like even beyond the Zoom calls, two people from the group text me regularly and say, what are you working on? And I realized I'm doing the self-help creep thing of, if I buy the book and enter the class and follow the guy's newsletter, then I will know whatever I don't know, and this will be easy. And luckily, I finally came to the point of knowing I don't need to buy that. I'm sure it's just fine, but it's redundancy. And I do think it would be a waste. I don't think the guy is cheating people. If you are interested in that challenge, then great. But I am not, because I already have that stuff. I'm 2 months out of my goal setting class, and so everything that was shiny and new is getting a little tarnished. And speaking of the self-help stuff, I recently re-listened to Atomic Habits, which is one of the best books I've read on productivity and everything. But Atomic Habits says something very profound that I'd never heard before, which is, the people who succeed are the ones who can deal with the boredom. Now, I say persistence is better than talent, because if you submit a story 40 times and you might get a sale, when somebody who's just relying on talent will submit 2 or 3 times and think, oh, well, that's not going to work. I quit. It's that gifted children problem. Everything's easy until it's not. And when it's not, then clearly something's wrong. But I'd always said it like persistence. But the Atomic Habits guy, that was... calling it boredom admits... really talks about the challenge there. Because starting something new... like I said, when I got out of this class, everything was all new and shiny and fresh in my mind. And now it's not. And now is the point where I have to be relying on the habits and relying on accepting the boredom and doing these things and not looking immediately for something new again. I'm like a serial monogamist with self-help books. So I don't think this applies to things like books about writing or advice on agent hunting or editor hunting or whatever, because there's so many different things to cover and there's so many different points of view. But when it comes to self-help, it's like, get a book, try it out. If it doesn't work, move to something else. If it does work, but then grows less shiny, that's human, and you should probably just keep going. Dusty says, the boredom thing is real. I want to start new stories all the time instead of finishing the ones that I've been working on for years. Exactly. That's another thing, is once the newness wears off on your work in progress, you want to move to something else. You need to keep up with the boredom of thinking that this book is crap when it's not. It's probably not. And if it is, it's probably not as bad as you think it is. And if it is as bad as you think it is, then it's just another step on your journey to becoming a writer. Because we've all written that book. Or we've all written that story. So finish it, move on to the next one. It can be hard when you feel like you've plateaued and you're trying to find a new way to improve, maximize productivity, etc. That is a very good point, Valerie. That it's rough. Plateaus are so hard to deal with because you never know when it's going to improve. And you never know if you need another tool in order to improve. Like, I've been trying to work on my podcast and stream numbers, and it is trending upward, but far slower than even the modest goal I had. And I keep thinking, do I need another book on streaming? Do I need another, service? Like, there's now a service for you to chat with your fans, and you can have them pay like $5 a month, and you can do regular chats. And I'm like, that looks interesting. And then I realize I have that. It's called Discord. And if you support my Patreon or you support this show on Twitch, you can get access to it. And that's where I hang out and talk to people. So I don't need the new service. It's not going to solve anything for me. But yeah, a lot of people I've talked to when I complain about the things I've done to try to improve my outreach, you know, a lot of them say, you're just on a plateau. You just got to keep working until something changes. Well, even though this has been going longer than my usual, I usually cut the podcast off at this point and then continue chatting with people in the chat. And if you want to hear what else we talk about, then you can get the full version of the show by supporting Patreon, patreon.com/mightymer. But yeah, I'm going to end it for the RSS feed. You can find me at merverse.com and mightymer@gmail. And you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I should be writing theme music provided by John Emilio. You can find more about him at johnemilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.